Welcome to the Closely Watched Films podcast. My name is Kaylee and this is our very first episode, so congratulations on finding me before I was cool. The Closely Watched Films podcast will delve deeper into the films you know and love, as well as more underrated selections. In each episode, I'll talk about the history of the film, analyse potential meanings, and chat about any interesting facts I can find. Over time, I hope other people will join me on the podcast so we can closely watch a film of their choice. But for now, it's just little old me. I hope you enjoy this first episode, and please let me know if there's anything else you'd like to hear as this platform evolves. In honour of Kenji Mizoguchi's birthday tomorrow on the 16th of May, I thought we could dedicate this first episode to one of his most beloved films, Ugetsu. Kenji Mizoguchi was born on the 16th of May, 1898, and passed away from leukemia in August of 1956, the same year his final film, Street of Shame, was released. Some of his most critically acclaimed films include Ugetsu, Sancho the Bailiff, and The Life of Oharu. Mizoguchi is often considered different from many of his contemporaries because of his interest in portraying the experiences of women in his films. The director forms what is known as the Golden Age of Japanese cinema, along with Akira Kurosawa and Yasujirō Ozu. Ugetsu was released in 1953. The title means something like A Night with a Misty Moon After the Rains, a title which draws on a long history of storytelling with inspiration from both the East and West. Mizoguchi drew on various stories when creating the film. From Akira Iweda's Ugetsu Monogatari, or Tales of Moonlight and Rain, he took inspiration from The House in the Thicket and The Lust of the White Serpent. Simultaneously, he sought inspiration from Guy de Maupassant's Decoye. The title is associated with supernatural beings, as it has long been believed by many that rainy nights or morning moons are signifiers of the supernatural. We begin the film in a small farming village called Nakonogo, which lies on the shore of Lake Biwa in Omi Province. Omi Province was an old province of Japan and is now known as Shiga Prefecture. Despite the name change, the history and culture can still be seen, and locals are proud of the area's heritage. Lake Biwa is in the centre of what is now Shiga Prefecture. The lake's name refers to its shape as it resembles a biwa, a type of traditional Japanese lute. It's also considered one of the world's oldest lakes, having been formed at least 4 million years ago. According to website Visit Omi, the region was once the centre of Buddhism in Japan and was a hub for the transport of people, information and goods. This can be seen in Ugetsu as Genjuro and Tobe, along with their families, attempt to escape the soldiers in their village via the lake. As the largest lake in Japan, it will have offered a large number of connections for a farming village like Nakonogo. The film is set during the Sengoku period. This period saw almost continuous conflict, including civil wars in the 15th and 16th centuries. The decline of the Ashikaga shogunate was an integral aspect of this period as traditional master-servant relationships broke down. During the Sengoku period, the rules surrounding samurai culture were loosened, which meant more people from lower social classes could join. You can see this loosening of samurai culture in Tobe's story arc. In many of his scenes, he is told peasants cannot become samurai. A financial barrier also exists, as he struggles to buy the requisite armour to become a vassal in the first place. However, once Tobe brings back the head of a general, albeit a stolen one, he finally achieves his lifelong dream of becoming a samurai and is provided with a horse, armour, and his own vassals. After a profitable trip to Omizo to sell his pottery, Genjuro prepares for another trip against warnings that he should prepare for the war instead. He just about finishes making the extra pots when Lord Shibata Katsui's army storms the village, pillaging and destroying as they go. Shibata Katsui, otherwise known as Gonroku, was a real Japanese samurai during this time. He served Oda Nobunaga, one of the leading figures of the Sengoku period. The group, including Genjuro and Tobe, their wives Miyagi and Ohama, and Genjuro's son Genichi, begin the journey across Lake Biwa to sell the pottery at a market elsewhere. While they are rowing though, another boat emerges from the fog to warn them of pirates operating on the lake. Miyagi and Genichi are dropped back off at shore, but Ohama refuses to leave Tobe, since they have no children to consider. Once they arrive at the market, Genjuro makes a profit selling his pottery. Tobe takes his share to buy armour and disappears to become a samurai. Meanwhile, Genjuro is seduced by a mysterious figure, Lady Wakaza, with whom he remains at the Katsuki Mansion. What follows is a nightmare for the two women who have been left behind. Miyagi and Ohama bear the consequences of their husband's actions and the war-obsessed patriarchy in general. According to Wikipedia, Mizoguchi actually made Ugetsu to express regret about the pro-war extremism leading to World War II. He made the propaganda film The 47 Ronin in 1941 and subsequently changed his attitudes towards war and its horrifying consequences. To rectify what he believed to be his mistake, he included anti-war rhetoric in Ugetsu and emphasised the devastation war and oppression cause. Ohama's plight is particularly poignant because it highlights what happened to comfort women at the hands of the Imperial Japanese Army. Comfort women were women and girls forced into sexual slavery before and during World War II. In Ugetsu, Ohama's fate is terrible, but in reality, comfort women were treated much, much worse. The film is moral in nature and discusses the consequences of oppression, particularly through the treatment of Miyagi and Ohama. Some reviews feel the women are merely vessels of misery, however, since there are no real consequences for the men once they've returned home. Ohama mostly berates herself for being what she considers defiled, while Miyagi forgives Genjuro from beyond the grave. Traditional expressions of art can be seen throughout Ugetsu, including no, which is a type of Japanese dance drama that has been performed since the 14th century. According to Asia for Educators, it is the oldest surviving form of Japanese theatre and combines music, dance and acting to communicate Buddhist themes. Many no dramas involve supernatural beings in human form, specifically in a site that held significant meaning for them during their life. No makeup is striking, with one feature being smudged eyebrows situated high on the forehead. In Ugetsu, Lady Wakaza wears this identifiable makeup and performs no dances for Genjuro and her ghostly father. Later in the film, we discover that Lady Wakaza is a ghostly figure herself. When Genjuro visits the village to make some purchases, he meets a priest who paints Buddhist symbols on his body with the purpose of exorcising the spirits. Lady Wakaza's servant admits they are spirits who have returned to the world of the living so Wakaza can experience the love she was unable to find before she was killed. Lady Wakaza urges Genjuro to go with her, but he refuses, escaping and collapsing. Upon waking, he is accused of stealing a sword and has his money confiscated in lieu of being taken to the burned down prison. He realises the Kutsuki mansion is in ruins, so returns home to look for Miyagi. This storyline is reminiscent of no drama and emphasises the strength of many Japanese art forms to survive across generations despite the destruction of war. Ugetsu won several awards in 1953, including a Silver Lion at the Venice Film Festival. There tend to be two films that receive credit for making Japanese films popular in the West, and those are Akira Kurosawa's Rashomon, also adapted from a story, and this. The costumes were of particular importance to Mizoguchi, as he wished to portray all historical details accurately. According to the Film Foundation, he would order hundreds of retakes and ask for rewrites in the middle of shooting until he was satisfied with the result. Ugetsu was restored by the Film Foundation and Kadokawa Corporation at Cineric Laboratories in New York, with consultation from Masahiro Miyajima and Martin Scorsese. Scorsese and other filmmakers have praised Mizoguchi's work, with Ugetsu being one of the most beloved films of all time. Martin Scorsese said, "I first saw Ugetsu on TV in 1958, and I have been obsessed ever since by its beauty and poetry." And Jean-Luc Godard exclaimed he was the greatest of Japanese filmmakers, or quite simply one of the greatest filmmakers. I imagine this type of praise would have heartened any other director, but Mizoguchi seemed to be a slave to his medium, a perfectionist. Everything had to be portrayed in just the correct way, leading to long hours and much constructive criticism for cast and crew alike. The cinematographer Kazuo Miyagawa worked with Mizoguchi across six films, but explained the only one Mizoguchi praised was Ugetsu. Although the film does highlight oppression and the plight of women, especially during wartime, many critics believed it didn't go far enough. Mizoguchi himself agreed with this. He wanted the ending to be more severe, but he was ruled against for commercial purposes. Today, the film is considered a masterpiece by many filmmakers and film lovers. But what do you think? Did Mizoguchi treat his female characters too poorly? Or do you think it was an accurate representation of war, both during the Sengoku period and World War II? Thank you for listening to this first episode of the Closely Watched Films podcast. Let me know any suggestions you have in the comments, and I'll see you for the next episode. Take care and keep on viewing. Bye-bye.